Stone walls do not a prison make. Carlos Otero looked gloomy, Jordan thought. Sitting next to the hotel room's bed where Aditi lay, he watched Otero in the holographic viewer. The network owner was apparently in his office. Jordan could see the towers of Boston through the window behind Otero, and a slice of the harbor glittering in the morning sun.
"Halleck is being her bitchy best," Otero was saying gloomily. "She's referred our complaint to the World Council's legal department. It'll take weeks before they even convene a hearing. Months, maybe."
"And in the meantime, we're bottled up here in this habitat," Jordan said. With a mournful shake of his head, Otero said,
"They're not going to allow you off the habitat, Jordan. She's blocking all traffic to and from Gandhi."
"She can do that? Legally?" With a nod, Otero said,
"My legal department tells me she can. She's apparently declared an emergency and invoked some regulation about inspecting all flights into and out of the habitat. She's not stopping any flights, just inspecting the passengers to make sure you two aren't aboard any of them."
"And this is within the Council's legal powers?"
"Yes, damn it. The International Transportation Safety Commission, one of Halleck's bureaucracies."
Jordan glanced at Aditi, who was sitting up in the bed. Turning back to Otero, he said, "Well, I suppose we'll have to stay here for the time being."
One other thing," Otero said, his expression morphing from unhappy to angry. "She's put an injunction on us doing any broadcasts from Gandhi."
"That muzzles us."
"It certainly does. I've got my legal people protesting it, but again, it'll take weeks to get a court hearing."
"She really wants to keep us from speaking to the public."
"That she does," Otero said. "The first act of a tyrant. Muzzle the news media."
Once Jordan ended his doleful conversation with Otero, he turned back to Aditi and was surprised to find her smiling cheerfully. "You're not upset?" With a little shrug, she said,
"Not very much. Should I be?
We're penned in here.
We can turn this into a second honeymoon. Or our first, really. We never had an actual honeymoon, if you recall."
Smiling back at her, Jordan said, "That would be wonderful, except that we can't allow Halleck to keep us muzzled like this. We've got to be able to tell the people the truth." Aditi's face grew more serious.
"Jordan, have you considered the possibility that your people don't want to be bothered with the truth?"
"Not bothered."
"They live prosperous lives. They have the illusion of freedom. They take for granted that the World Council watches over them, protects them, takes care of them."
"And we're trying to shake them loose from that idea.
We're trying to make them accept the responsibility that they don't really want to accept."
"So Halleck is right and we're wrong?"
"No," Aditi said. "But she's in tune with what your people feel. We're trying to make them change. Change is always painful, Jordan."
Reluctantly, he admitted, "I suppose you're right."
"So what do you want to do about it?"
He thought it over for all of a heartbeat. "Well, at least we're together. That's the most important thing."
"No," said Aditi quite seriously. "The most important thing is to get the people of Earth to save those worlds that will soon be engulfed by the death wave."
He stared at her.
"Yes, that's so, but how do we do it?"
Aditi broke into a sunny smile.
"I believe your people have an old adage. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free."
Mitchell Thornberry was flattered that the chairwoman of the World Council had invited him to Barcelona. Just a quick trip for a face-to-face meeting. But being asked to meet personally with Anita Halleck was an unexpected honor. Honor or command appearance, he asked himself, as the rocket plane arced high above the curving horizon. Looking through the narrow window next to his seat, Thornberry saw the onion skin layer of blue atmosphere. "How thin it looks," he said to himself. "The lives of 20-some billion people depend on that thin slice of air." The plane landed smoothly at Barcelona's aerospaceport, and a quartet of World Council flunkies met him inside the terminal to whisk him to his meeting with Halleck. To Thornberry's surprise, they did not go downtown to the Council headquarters, but out into the hills at the edge of the city, to an impressive mansion. The flunkies left him at the door, where a stiffly dignified butler in solemn black livery led him through a long corridor to the back of the sizable house. Anita Halleck was sitting in a chaise longue on a patio by an Olympic-sized swimming pool, wearing shorts and a shapeless green pullover. Thornberry suddenly felt overdressed in his wine-red jacket and off-white slacks. No one else was present, only a serving robot standing beside a wheeled cart bristling with bottles. Halleck got to her feet as Thornberry approached, and the butler headed back inside the house. Extending her hand, she smiled and said, "How good of you to come and see me on such short notice." For a ridiculous moment, Thornberry felt that she expected him to kiss her hand. He took it in his own and replied, "I'm somewhat mystified as to why you want to see me in person." Instead of replying, Halleck gestured to the rolling bar. "I believe your preference is Paddy's whiskey." The robot stirred to life and lifted a bottle of Paddy's from the collection. "She knows I like Paddy's," Thornberry thought. "There's not much about me she doesn't know, I'm sure." Thornberry took the proffered drink and settled himself on a cushioned chair next to Halleck's lounge. He saw there was a tall glass of something pink and cool-looking on the small table between them. The trees on the other side of the pool were casting long late afternoon shadows across the patio. "As I said, I'm mystified as to why you've invited me here," Thornberry repeated. Quickly he added, "Pleased, of course, but mystified." Halleck smiled coolly.
"I wanted to speak to you in private about Jordan Kell and his wife."
"Aditi?"
"Yes, the alien woman. She's been working with a group of our scientists, you know. They're developing the technology for faster-than-light communications."
Thornberry nodded. "And how is their work coming along, may I ask?"
"Of course you may. They've built a prototype system."
"Have they now? And it works?"
Nodding, Halleck said, "Many thousands of times faster than light. We'll be able to have practically instantaneous communications throughout the entire solar system."
"That's grand."
"It should open quite a sizable market."
"Indeed it should."
Pursing her lips momentarily, Halleck asked, "I want to continue our conversation about developing the commercial market for FTL communication systems." Without an eyeblink's hesitation, Thornberry said, "Certainly." "I believe that I can convince the Council to grant you an exclusive license to develop the technology for commercial use."
"For how long a period?"
Halleck hesitated just long enough to make Thornberry realize she was toying with him. At last she answered, "Shall we say 5 years?"
10 would be better. 8 at least. After all, we'd have to sink a lot of capital into new manufacturing facilities and infrastructure and
6 years.
8, Thornberry said.
8 years for exclusive rights, she mused. I suppose I could get that through the Council.
That'd be grand.
If I'm still the Council's chair after next year's elections.
Thornberry instantly recognized what she wanted. I'm afraid it's too late for me to withdraw Jordan's nomination, you know.
I understand, said Halleck. But you don't have to give him your support, do you?
He'll be nominated, but without your support he'll have a difficult time winning the election.
His brows furrowing, Thornberry said,
Jordan's a friend. We've been through a lot together.
But you'll be too busy setting up your FTL business to spend much time or money on the election campaign, won't you?
For several heartbeats, Thornberry did not reply. At last he said in a low voice, I suppose so. The two of them chatted on as the shadows of dusk enveloped the patio. Thornberry understood why she wanted this meeting face to face with no witnesses. She's handing me a fortune, with no competition, but the price is to hang Jordan out to dry. Ah, well, he told himself, maybe Jordan can get himself elected without my help.
Halleck watched the expression on his face as the evening darkened. How transparent he is, she thought. I've got him now. He won't dream of helping Kell and his alien wife, even if they find a way to return to Earth. Mitchell Thornberry is on my side now.